Hello and welcome to the Drum History Podcast. I'm your host, Bart Vanderzee, and today I am joined by my friend Kyle Schneider to talk about power toms. Kyle, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Bart. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. This is a really cool one. It's especially cool because you reached out as a listener of the show and just said, like a topic suggestion, which people do all the time and I love, and said, I think an episode on power toms would be really cool. And sometimes I respond to people and I go, yeah, that would be awesome. But like, how do you find a person to talk about that? Maybe there's powertoms.com or something. I'm not sure if there is, but you then kind of took it upon yourself to do the research and put together an outline. And I think that is super cool that you did that. So I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. It's like a niche topic. You know, I think sometimes it doesn't get discussed or it's quickly glossed over, I think, in the drumming community. So I thought this would be kind of fun to do.
Yeah. Kyle, before we start, let me give a couple, there's some housekeeping stuff I want to do real quick, and then we'll hop in and kind of talk more about you and then get into power toms.
Sure.
So before we start, I want to give a big thank you to Matt Waddell, who joined up on Patreon at a certain tier where he gets a shout out, and his name now goes on the end of all the YouTube videos. And he works with Innovative Percussion, who does some really cool drumsticks and mallets and all that stuff. So he's going to be representing Innovative Percussion and representing the brand that way on the little card at the end of all the YouTube videos. So if you want to get a shout out and promote your brand or podcast or shop or whatever, you can do that for 10 or 15 bucks a month and you'll get on the end of all the YouTube videos. And then this is really cool. I want to give a quick mention to the folks at Isotope, because through Ben Hilsinger, who is at Big Fat Snare Drum and Big Fat Five and, you know, great guy. I was like, hey, Ben, you know them. Can you connect me with them? He set me up with Isotope. They gave me access to the brand new RX-10 Advanced Suite, which is like not cheap and is a total upgrade from what I was doing. So I just want to give a big thank you and say that, you know, anyone out there who needs that kind of thing, which you do need that thing. Everyone needs it. It's awesome. I've used it on every single episode. So thank you to Isotope for the RX-10 Advanced license, which I love. All that being said, Kyle, let's hop in here, man. Let's start off a little bit with like who you are and why you love power toms so much and what got you into this.
Sure. So first of all, thanks so much for having me, Bart. For all the listeners out there, I'm like, you know, nobody in the drumming community. I'm just a drummer like everybody else. So I grew up in I was born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know. So I have vivid memories of being just kind of attracted to drumming from a very, very young age. For example, I can remember way back all the way in like 1980, I was 5 years old. And I'd come home from like nursery school. And my brother, who's about 4 years older than me, I'd go raid his record collection while he was still in school. And I can remember putting on like Parallel Lines from Blondie and like just the super crisp drumming. I was like really drawn to that. And then listening to Alive 2 from Kiss, you know, there was something about the fact that live album just kind of puts you into that live immersive experience. And that just like drew me towards the drums. Sure. And I can remember playing with like Pots and Pans, like I think a lot of other kids did when they were young. And then fast forward about 1985, like the spring of 85, one day my brother comes home and puts on Animalize Live on VHS. Before there was DVDs and streaming VHS tapes, that's how he watched everything.
Oh yeah.
And so Animalize Live was a very famous Kiss concert from the 80s, and Eric Carr was on the drums, and his kit was just massive. His style was just like monstrous, thunderous. Very kind of Bonhamish, kind of Zeppelin, very hard hitter. But he was really crisp and tight, and I was just drawn to him as a drummer. And so throughout the 80s, you know, I just loved a lot of that kind of like hard rock, heavy metal kind of music. And then I can remember in the August of 1989 is when I first went to like the first drum store in town. And lo and behold, there was a magazine called Modern Drummer. And I said, what is this? I said, up until this point, I thought the only magazines were like People magazine that you see at the grocery store. I had no idea, you know, these music type magazines existed. So I was totally floored. So Chris France from the Talking Heads happened to be on the cover of that magazine. But within it, it had product reviews for the Pearl Custom Z and the Pearl Export. And of course, all kids my age at 14, 15 drooled over that Custom Z. I mean, that was just like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
And at no time was I going to be able to afford that as a 14, 15-year-old kid.
No.
But, you know, I read the Pearl Export Review. I guess they had just had recently updated at that particular time. And so I was gravitating towards that. And then a couple months later, that same store had a brand new export kit in the store. And I scooped that kit up super quick as soon as I saw it. And I played that for 31 years.
Wow.
Also in the power time size, you know, that was a 8x8, 10x10, 12x10, 13x11. So I had four racks, two floors, two snares, or one snare. But those exports were just so durable. They lasted forever. And if you can tune them well, you know, they would sound good.
Good heads. I mean, I think the export is pretty much accepted as something that like changed the industry of good quality drums at an affordable price, which then I think all the other companies sort of had to step it up and not have their low end kits be, you know, junky, like throw away after a year kits.
Sure.
And man, you're so right about, I think that four piece, you know, jazz kits are just awesome. They're really cool to look at, but as a, you know, 12-year-old, a huge double bass monster drum set with cymbals everywhere is what sucks you in. I mean, that's like, it's just like looking at, it's like a kid having a Ferrari poster on their wall. You know, it's the same thing where it's like, you don't have like, a more practical car on your wall. You have there's no Ford Taurus poster hanging up. It's, it is really, really, really cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
For sure. So that kind of got me into drumming. And so I've been playing ever since, you know, off and on here and there. And then we can talk about the kit behind me, you know, maybe a little later. But, you know, I thought before we get into like the history of power toms, so let's just quickly identify, you know, what are power toms in contrast to kind of the standard drums of today.
Sure.
So in my opinion, you know, the shallower the depth of the tom, you know, the shallower the note, or the quicker the note, you know, the deeper the shells, the longer the note. And it all comes down to preference, you know, for a lot of drummers, you know, who like the shallow toms, or sometimes I call them pancake toms because they're kind of flat. You know, they provide a great sound. There's no denying that shallow toms provide a great sound. They just don't have the sustain that the power toms have, you know, whereas power toms, maybe at times, depending on how you tune them, they don't have that attack that you might be looking for. But it also depends on the type of music you want to play. So I think those are the key characteristical differences between the two types of drums.
I think that's fair. And we've talked about it before, but like, I guess it would be referred to as square sizes a lot, right?
Sure.
Meaning that it's 10 by 10, 11 by 11, 12 by 12.
Absolutely. And it's funny in doing the research, because, you know, a lot of this is, I have pretty good long-term memory from when I was growing up, but I've done a lot of catalog research, you know, for this episode. And when you look at any of the drum companies, you know, over the course of 20 years, you know, they all go back and forth between listing depth by a diameter or diameter by depth. And in some cases, you know, I'll hit on it just a little bit later. I really had to stare at these catalogs for a while because I couldn't tell which was listed first in, you know, some of the tom sizes. I was scratching my head from it. I'm like, did they make this size? You know, very confusing, but A+ for creativity.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain angle, you're looking at it and they're all big. They're all big sizes. So it's hard to tell. I mean, if it's a 4x12, that's pretty clear. What? But if it's a 12x14 versus a 14x12, that's like difficult to tell. So,
sure.
Yeah. And, I will say for anyone, if you're listening on, you know, the podcast platform, like, you know, going running or whatever you're doing, walking the dog or something, I'm going to have, photos that Kyle provided of a lot of the drum sets, in the YouTube video of this. So you can check that out as well. And he has a monster, awesome, beautiful custom dream kit, a Pearl set behind him, which, like he said, we'll talk about later. Cause I know that's a cool process of how you got it, but,
sure.
So Kyle, I'm looking at your outline here. Let's go to the part here. What is the genesis of power toms?
Sure. So, and again, this is just all my research, my interpretation. So if people want to counter that, no problem. I take no offense. But I believe the birth of power toms came into being in 1980. Like for me, that is the definitive year of the power tom. However, I'd say probably 12 to 15 years prior to that, the evolution of those began. You know, it just took a little while for the drum companies to get there. You know, that seemed to be the final evolution in like drum making in terms of sizes, if you will. for like everyone knows, like Louis Belson was the first one to play a double bass guitar, or he's the first credited person, you know, as a famous person to play double bass back in 49 or 46. So even way back then, you know, he was like kind of had a vision, you know, that was from a visual perspective, looked amazing, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, everyone doesn't, you know, the practicality of moving that stuff around and whatnot. But it provided the vision of what could be. And then so fast forward into the early 60s, you know, you've got the great Charlie Watts and Ringo, you know, they have their ultimate four piece, sometimes five piece, you know, depending on what they were doing, kits. And that when you think of the 60s a lot, you know, that's the vision that I get, you know, while looking at Charlie Watts or Ringo's yeah. kit. You know, they're very indelible mark, you know, of for drumming for sure. And, you know, to their credit, you know, they never kind of deviated. They always stay stuck with their particular drums and methods of how they played. But as you get into the later 60s, you know, you see artists like John Bonham, who usually had a five-piece kit. He had one rack, two floors, but he was playing a 26-inch bass drum, which was pretty big at the time. And his rack time generally was like a 14 by 10 or even a 15 by 12 at times. You know, I think he interchanged the sizes a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But for that particular time, 1969-70, you know, those were huge toms, you know.
Yeah.
That's a pretty monster tom. So, and then you have other artists in the 70s like Carmen Appice and Neil Smith, who played with Alice Cooper at Billion Dollar Babies, who had massive kits. He's got like 8-9 rack toms on his kit, but not power time sizes yet. They're still shallow in the traditional sense of tom toms.
Sure. And I think of like Nick Mason from Pink Floyd, who like there's like, you know, the Live at Pompeii thing where he's got the Ludwig set, the Silver Sparkle, and he's got
yep.
they've got, I think he had two toms in the middle of the bass drums and
sure.
Two floors. But yeah, they're not really, they haven't gotten deeper, but Bonzo definitely did. Carmine Appice definitely getting bigger. So it's interesting. And I guess it goes without saying that the music sort of dictates what's happening, where you have more toms, you do more, you do more, you
sure.
know, the music's getting heavier. There's more stuff you can do. So yeah.
Yeah. More melodic fills and interesting
yes.
things you could do. Like you could be the most phenomenal drummer in the world, but at the end of the day, if you only have a four piece, doesn't matter if they're power toms or shallow, you only have four different tones you can create out of.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the debate too, of like, are you this is like a rhetorical, I don't even think this is a real question, but it's the thought I think some people have of, if you have a bigger drum set, it means you're a better drummer. Which
yeah.
I don't think that's true. I think you can be
agree.
Amazing player, but I think if like, you know, someone who doesn't really play that much or just kind of like you'd look at it and go, oh, they're better because they have a ton of drums versus like, you know, Max Roach playing a small four piece kit or something, which we all know is not true.
Yeah.
But it's just an interesting thought. You know, that definitely
sure.
conveys, oh, you're a better drummer. You've got two bass drums, five toms, two floors. Concert toms over here, it's like psychologically different.
Yeah, I think maybe for people who aren't drummers, you
yes.
know, maybe they'd be more inclined to believe that. But, you know, I think any drummer certainly is, you and I would agree, Bart, you know,
yes.
one drum, you could still be a phenomenal drummer. Absolutely.
I mean, I think it, and I think drummers know that, like, what's most impressive is being able to, like the classic videos of Buddy Rich holding down and playing a solo just on a snare drum.
Unbelievable.
That's what's like, or just doing Max Roach on just the hi-hat. It's like, so yeah, it's all about the drummer. But anyway, carry on.
Sure. So going back, so like you said earlier, Bart, you know, you kind of, the square size is 10 by 10, 12 by 12, you know, the sizes of the time, the traditional sizes, which are, you know, highly in vogue today. You know, we're talking about, so I'll try to stick with diameter by depth throughout our podcast.
Okay.
If I deviate, I'll try to remember to fix it.
Yeah.
But we're talking about like for rack toms, you know, 8x7, 10x7 or 10x8, 12x8, 13x9. Sometimes you see a 13x8, 14x10. Those are pretty much the standard sizes for today. And as they were back then, those were standard sizes. Certainly as the early 70s grew, you started to see more like 13 and 14 inch toms on those drum sets. But initially, you know, you'll see a lot of 10x8 or 12x8, those type of sizes,
gotcha.
Which have great sound, a lot of attack on those, you know, they sound great. So I thought we'd try to go over a couple of different drum companies and like what was being offered at the time. So initially, I kind of mentioned like Ringo had his Ludwig and Charlie played his Gretsch kit. So Pearl, when they came out with the President series in 67, there's still only a four piece or so. But in 1969, Pearl comes out with what's called the Big Shot outfit. And this was a double bass kit, pretty like the first double bass shell pack they put out at the time. Still with the standard sizes, a bass drum of 20 by 14, 12 by 8 and 13 tom-toms and a 16-16 floor tom. And then just a couple of years later in 74, now they release the Double 9, which is like the nine-piece double bass kits that we kind of know that were in vogue, certainly at the 80s, like with those shell packs. One was interesting because in the Double 9, so now they're going with a bit bigger bass drum. You've got a 22-inch by 14 instead of a 20 by 14 just from a couple years prior. You still have a 12 by 8, but this one, they have two 13-inch rack toms on the kit. So you got a 12 by 8, a 13 by 9, another 13 by 9, and then a 14 by 10. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you can tune drums high and low. So, I mean, as a drummer, I would assume you would probably tune one of those on the lower side, one on the higher side, a little more variety.
Interesting choice, though.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the only time I saw in any of the catalog research where they would have the same drum within the shell pack. Very interesting. Mm. So the following year, I think around 75, finally Pearl comes out with what they call their Double 10 setup, which is basically a concert tom drum set, which we all know the traditional sizes of concert toms, like 5.5, 8x5.5, and so on and so forth. So I think they finally get up to like a 16 by 14 inch tom, but they're concert toms with no bottom heads, with bass drums and a floor tom. So now you're seeing like pretty basically, that's the power tom kit of the 70s is, these, their tunables or the concert tom kits, where they fully explode and,
yeah,
you have the full tone range of all these sounds at your disposal. And then Pearl, a few years later in 1980, they released the Genesis, which is a really short-lived kit for them. I think it was only out for about 2 years. And the Genesis is their first true power tom kit, similar to the one behind me. They had eight rack toms, just one floor and two bass drums. But more specifically, so it was a 6x8, an 8x8, and then a 10x8. So still some a little shallow, 12x10, 13x11, 14x12. A 15 by 14, and then they went back to the square size and went with a 16 by 16 tom-tom for their final, for the largest rack tom. And then now you're seeing a 22 by 16 inch. So now we're about 5 years later after those Double 10 setups. And so we started out around 1970 with a 14 by 20 to a 22 by 14. Now around 1980, we're at a 22 by 16. So you can see the bass drum is just kind of gradually pushing out.
Yeah.
In depth. And in 1980s, 22 by 16 was the size of the day, if you will.
Sure. This is interesting too. Looking at the picture of it here, once you get to the larger, literally like the mounted tom, the largest end to before you get to the floor tom are basically just mounted floor toms. I mean, they're sure. Huge. And you said what, they were 14 on this or a 16?
Yeah. For that Genesis, that's a 16 by 16 inch mounted tom-tom floor tom, if you will. So it's a little lighter because there's no brackets for the legs, but.
Oh, true. So that's, what I'm getting at too is the hardware that's required to mount that thing.
Sure.
And get everything set up in the right spot. We're pretty early in, the days of reliable hardware, which Pearl always had pretty good hardware as far as I can tell. And, brands like Ludwig, which obviously they got way better, but I had an old huge rocker set, Rocker 2, I think, and that had horrible hardware where everything was always falling and everything was breaking. You'd have to go and use a wrench to tighten it. But these are giant mounted floor toms, basically. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're fun to see. I'm sure, like you said, hard to position. And if you're in a touring band with that, having extra hardware, God forbid something snaps or breaks, can't even use that anymore for the night until you can fix it.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, we're still kind of in the early stages of hardware development, if you will. I'm gonna move gears over here to Tama. Yeah. And I only learned it's actually called Tama by listening to your Tama episode. Up until that episode, I always thought it was Tama, and I'm
I said Tama for a long time. I said Pasty as a kid. I don't think anyone cares. You know, they know what you mean.
So Tama, a little bit different. You know, they come on the scene in the early 70s as well. In 77, they have their Superstar series, which is a 9-piece kit, shell pack. So you've got 12 by 8, 13 by 9, 14 by 10, and a 15 by 12. This is the first time I've seen a 15-inch drum in a shell pack. And now it has the 16 by 16 and 18 by 16 floor toms, which we all use today.
Yep.
And then, so that's really the precursor to their Power Tom series of drums. However, just before Tama launched their kind of Power Toms in the early 80s, in 1980, they come out with their Titan series stands, which are like super heavy duty hardware. I mean, just looking at the photos from those, you can really tell like they look sturdy. And the drums on that are not going anywhere that you mount on there. Yeah. So they almost kind of did it the right way in terms of they put the hardware out first. And then basically the following year, Tama comes out with their Power Time series for like... Yeah,
to hold it. hold these giant drums.
Hold all that weight. So they called... So Tama calls them around 1982, their extras, Tama extras. And I wrote it down. So it's extra power, extra depth, extra new, Tama extras. And so this is the birth of the Power Toms for Tama. And this is really interesting. You know, all the drum companies all had like a little different flavor in terms of Power Toms and the sizes they were offering. So for Tama, you have an 8x9. So an 8-inch diameter, 9-inch depth on the rack tom, a 10x9 diameter by depth, 10-inch diameter, 9-inch depth. And now we have this is not a typo, 11x10. 12 by 11, 13 by 12, 14 by 13, 15 by 14, all rack toms. So the anomaly here is the 11 by 10 tom-tom.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a typo. I found this in several of their catalogs in their, I would say their Art Star and Crest Star. I could be confused. All their Star series kind of blend together a little bit.
Sure, of course.
However, I reached out to Tama, and I want to give them all the credit because they got back to me and I asked them, I'm like, hey, is this a typo? I have never seen or heard of an 11-inch tom-tom. And they said, yes, we made them for a couple of years. So if you're a drummer out there with an 11-inch diameter tom-tom, hold on to that sucker. You know, those are kind of rare. I've never seen one before. And then, of course, I a step further. I'm like, well, if you own this, are there any heads available for this? Because so I reached out to a couple of drum companies, and Remo still makes an 11-inch diameter drum head. So if you have one of these, Remo for sure makes them. They got back to me, and I specifically asked them, and they said yes, they do, and you can get them in a couple of different varieties. So
that's
if you're
awesome.
A drummer, yeah, you got a 11-inch drum. There you go.
It's interesting how the drums getting bigger and the things and the music changing does affect other parts of the industries, like. Drum heads have to get bigger. They all sort of have to keep up with each other, you know, to keep the hardware and everything working together.
Very, very symbiotic.
Yes, exactly.
And then also, you know, one of the things I'll mention is certainly with Tama, not only the drums getting bigger, but they're getting thicker. You know, drums are much thicker and heavier now. So now you've got for their, for like the Grand Star series, which was a pretty big deal for them in the 80s. Their toms were 6 millimeters and then 9 millimeters in thickness on bass drums. So they're getting a little bit thicker. They're getting bigger. They're getting thicker, getting heavier.
Everything's heavier.
Everything's getting heavier. So Sonar is like the classic example of not only power toms, but like heavy drums. So we'll just backtrack just real quick and back to the 70s for their kind of quick evolution. So they had, their championship series in the 70s. So they had like, again, 22 by 14 inch bass drums. So they start out with the smaller traditional bass drums in the early mid 70s of the time, 12, 8, 13, 9 tom-toms. And then later on, just a couple years later in 78, they have their Phonic series, which they released a 5-piece shell pack. So not big hard rock drum set in terms of number of drums, but I thought this was interesting because it was kind of a step forward. You've got a 13 by 9 and a 14 by 10 mounted tom-toms in that shell pack. So 13 and 14 inch drum, you know, you don't see that often. In fact, I don't even know if in the 80s you saw that very much. Like usually those were add-ons. You'd have to get like the full 9-piece to get those bigger drums. But here the Harris Sonar is in the 70s with a five piece. Here you go. Here's a, you know, 13, 14 inch drum.
As we're going through, it's interesting to kind of, cause each company sort of like, with their unique things that they bring to the market kind of raises different questions of it's always kind of, people usually think of, to have a power tom drum set, you visually instantly go to a drum set like yours. Sure. Or one of these huge, the Rocker, whatever, these huge double bass mega drum sets. But by definition, a power tom drum set does not refer really to the number of drums. It could be a four-piece kit, fair to say, right? Like it could be a one-up, one-down power tom kit.
For sure. Totally agree. Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah.
And generally, though, like you, they're never usually photographed in that way, you know, for catalogs and things like that. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. And you can mix and match. Maybe have power tom with a shorter floor tom, or, you know, vice versa. That's what's so great about the drums. It's so individualized for every drummer. Like, there's no such thing as the wrong setup. It's whatever you want to play is that works for you. Then, hey, then that's totally, that's what works for you.
This episode is brought to you by Forks Drum Closet, Nashville's full-line drum store. Celebrating its 40th year in business, Forks is independently owned and operated in the heart of Music City. Specializing in drums and percussion, Forks offers great discounts on all major brands and will beat any retailer's advertised price. From new and used equipment, vintage drums, and marching and orchestral instruments, Forks has something for every drummer. They also offer professional rental, repair and restoration services, as well as drum lessons. Stop by their storefront at 308 Chestnut Street, Nashville, Tennessee. Call 615-383-8343 or go online at ForksDrumCloset.com.
Yeah, and I think of, like, just, you know, as on that note, before we move on, just like you think of drummers like Dave Grohl, who has a four-piece set with a deep power tom and a big floor tom on like a four-piece kit, you know? Sure. And I mean, it would be him. Or I always think back to, I think the drummer in Wayne's World, there was some shots of the drummer in Crucial Taunt playing. I'm pretty sure he was using power tom setups.
Sure.
On a smaller setup, and thinking on that, and we talked a little bit about this before, but how drummers using white Yamaha kit, and then in the music store, Garth is using the all put together power tom huge.
Sure.
I forget what model that was. That might have been a recording custom. But anyway, what I'm saying is maybe it was the same drum set. They just used different smaller pieces for the music video shoot or whatever.
Oh, sure.
Maybe that's a little Wayne's World conspiracy that can spread around the internet. But
absolutely. Anyway. Well, yeah, I'll have to Google that when this is over.
Yes, exactly.
So now we're in the early 1980s. So Sonar just goes like way over the top with the power toms. You know, so they come out with their signature series in, I think, around 1982. And these are 12-ply drums. These are big and heavy, heavy drums. So they have 6x8, 8x8. And now we're going all square sizes, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Those were all mounted tom-toms. All the square sizes that we know. And then towards the end of the 80s, mid to late 80s, Sonar comes out with their signature light series, which exact same sizes, but, you know, it's reduced in weight and number of plies. So they said it was 50% lighter. So, for example, instead of being 12 millimeters in thickness, now we're at 6 millimeters in thickness, which by today's standards, 6 millimeters is still on the, it's not super thick, but it's definitely on the thicker side of drum shells. And a lot of them are 4.5 or 5, you know, with the reinforcement rings in there, but still much lighter than a 6-inch, 6 millimeter type shells. So they really, you know, went for it. And then Sonar has, and I have to find it here because I had to write it down, because this is where I had to look at the catalog a couple times. We're like, what sizes are these? Is it depth by a diameter or diameter by depth? And so in talking about their floor toms, they've got, they had like 14 by 12, 15 by 13, 16 by 14. And then they actually had a 20 by 18. That's the first time I saw a 20 inch floor tom. I mean, essentially that's a bass drum, a 20 by 18 inch floor tom. The niche with those are, they never came in any of the shell packs, you know, so you had to buy that as an add on to any of the kits that you purchased at the time. So just like the 11 inch Tama mounted tom, the Sonar 20-inch floor tom is another one of those hard to find drums around there. So if you've got one,
yeah,
no shortage of drum heads because there's so many 20 inch bass drums out there. So enjoy that thing, and I would hold on to that. If I had 20 inch floor time, I would definitely hang on to that. So switching gears, so we'll move over to Ludwig. You can't talk about power toms without talking about Ludwig drums. And so we go from the 60s with Ringo into the 70s with, you know, a lot of the great drummers, again, like Vinny Appice and, you know, all those massive kits that they have, Bonham, of course. And then in 1980, they come out with what they call their, it's funny, they call them aerial toms in 1980. And this was in their 1980 catalog, but this was buried way down on page 26 for considering this was essentially a new line of drums at the time. It wasn't kind of towards the front where it would catch, you know, the most attention. And they called them their aerial toms. And so this was actually buried way down on page, I think it was like 26 of their catalog. And so for the company to come out with essentially a new series of drums, I thought it was odd that it wasn't, you know, more in the forefront.
Yeah.
Because these are essentially just super deep concert toms, you know. So now we have, this is where it gets a little bit different. So now we have, still going by diameter, by depth, you've got a 6x9 and an 8x9. So 6-inch diameter by 9-inch depth. And then they go not quite square sizes, but you've got 12x11, 13x12, 14x13, 15x14, and 16x15-inch. Those were all rack toms. So I thought this was interesting because this is the first time, with the exception of rocket toms or rocket bonds, whatever you want to call them, you've got a tom-tom that the depth is greater than the diameter for a regular shell, you know, which causes, in general, like, you know, a higher pitch. Pearl has the Genesis in 1980, so that's a 6-inch by 8-inch, 6-inch diameter, 8-inch depth. And then Ludwig goes one step further with a 6-inch by 9-inch depth. So a little bit more kind of rocket tom, octobon type of drum.
You know, and just by chance, I have the 1980 Ludwig catalog downloaded and have it pulled up. And it is page 26. You were completely correct.
My memory eludes me.
I have this up because I've been working on a John Bonham episode, which will be out before this. So people have probably already have heard it, hopefully. But it's interesting because they're calling a double-headed power tom-tom, which it's just kind of like even that... and there's single-headed power tom-toms as well, which they have a Blue Vistalite power tom, which is neat. But just the nomenclature of power tom is kind of used in like their catalogs and things. So that's in 80, yeah. I guess that term power tom is already a part of the like culture.
It is. You start seeing that throughout the 80s, 82, 83, you know, all those, like even Pearl, like for their... I think it was for the export, but I think it was for a lot of their series. You know, they show the 8x8 and 10x10 kind of add-on pack, and they call them the Power Tom add-ons, if you will.
I wonder who coined it first. I'm sure you could probably go look at all a bunch of catalogs and go, who was the very, very first? But then it probably just kind of was one of those things where marketing people said it, and it just kind of stuck. But I wonder who was the very, very, very first, you know?
It's funny. If you ask Pearl or Ludwig or Sonar, they'll all say they did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, okay. Cool.
Yes. So throughout the 1980s, you'll see like the Ludwig rocker kits and the Pearl GLXs and MLXs. You know, all those kits are all full. Most of the time, you'll see them like 9 pieces, 4 racks, 2 floors in those sizes. And towards the end of the 80s, you also start seeing 22x18-inch bass drums. So now the bass drums are getting pushed out just a little bit further. And so we're just kind of moving along in the evolution of drum sizes once again. You know, power toms kind of get I'll say a bad rap, but they're kind of stuck in that niche of like, when you think of power toms, like hair metal and like the big 80s metal music kind of comes to mind, which totally accurate. A lot of those bands, you know, use those types of drums, but you know, those sizes are also used with other bands and other artists. It's not just specifically for that niche, but you know, I think those two in particular, power toms and like some of the hair bands of the time, you know, were symbiotic as well. They each kind of pushed each other and reinforced what they were. So towards the end of the 80s, getting into the 90s, as the music changed, you know, as there was kind of a backlash to that, you know, Nirvana overnight, you know, ended all the 80s kind of hair metal in one foul swoop, so did kind of the power tom massive kits go away. And that's where, as you talked about, Bart, we're talking about the, you can still have a power tom, but you don't have like 12 drums. You might have a four piece like Dave Grohl did. You know, he had a, it looked like it was like a 12 by 11 or a 13 by 12, that one rack tom that he was using in Nirvana. It's like a four piece. And then I think for me, like the, for the final kind of, I think 80s kind of cap into the 90s for power toms, I go back to the Pearl Custom Z. You know, I can remember seeing the ads everywhere. It said, for those who consider drumming an art, welcome to the ultimate canvas. And you saw that nine piece with all those square sizes on it and that beautiful champagne bird's eye or whatever. That was just gorgeous. I think everyone's jaw hit the floor when that came out. I was like, I would love that kit.
Oh, I'd love it too. I mean, it's just beautiful. There's so much just like real estate taken up. I mean, this drum set's massive. And this particular picture, which... you know, again, if you're on YouTube, you see it. If you're listening, just to describe it, it's a huge drum set. But these have the classic, I think I tried it once as a kid. It's got the classic, mm-hmm. like, cymbal boom arm going upside down with the cymbal yeah. hanging kind of inverted how it normally would. It's plain normal, but that was such a classic catalog thing from those yes. days. Did you ever, have you done that? Like, have you done that on your own kit?
I have not in many years. I did try that a couple of times. I know like Peter Chris and a couple other drummers actually use that in how they set their kit up. Sometimes I think it's yeah. actually due to necessity and how they got the kit with the toms. But yeah. I found that I haven't had a need to do that. So I just haven't done it. But it does. It's pretty effective. You know, it works.
It looks cool. I mean, yeah. in a catalog, it's kind of this like 90 degree angle coming in straight and then cymbals going down. And you're like, it's as a kid, you're like, I didn't know you could set it up like that. And I'm sure you experiment and stuff.
Like oh, that. Sure. Yeah. I do yeah. try to experiment, like, especially with this one behind me, I'm always tinkering with it. Try this, try that. You never yeah. know. See what works yeah. best. Yeah. So I think that was like the last kind of, that was the last power tom kit, in my opinion, is the Custom Z. I think that went from like 89 to around 92, 94, somewhere in that area. And then you start seeing, you know, the musical chase, you know, are changing in the early mid 90s. And as a result, you know, the drums become smaller in number of drums on the drummer's drum set. And then eventually they start becoming smaller themselves. You know, I think with the exception of like we talked about with like Dave Grohl and then like Lars Ulrich of Metallica, he, and you know, during the Black Album tour, he had that awesome nine piece white drum set with the 15 inch rack tom on there. And then by 96, Lars was down to a seven piece, which was still a pretty big drum set at the time, but he definitely was using those smaller rack toms, like 12 by 8, you know, 13 by 9, something a little bit smaller. I think maybe try to distance themselves a little bit from that kind of hair metal kind of 80s look. And of course, they sounded great. You know, those drums still sound good.
Yeah. So that's the end of the power tom as we know it. As it's would you call that its golden era? It's like 80 to 90, basically.
I would, yeah. Into the early 90s, that was certainly was the golden era of power toms. And you can see it in the catalogs, you know, even in 2000, in the early 2000s, the drum companies were pulling away from, you know, showcasing those types of drums in their catalogs. But if you looked in either the price guides or if you went to like where they actually list all the sizes, you would still see them listed in there. But you wouldn't actually necessarily see them in the photos per se, like if you were just flipping through the catalog real quick. So they were still offering a variety, but they didn't necessarily show. So I think for drummers today, you know, I think in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, my opinion, I think you see a lot of these power tom kits on social media now, and a lot of them, but they're all retro, they're all older, you know, they're not brand new. So I think for some brand new drummers today or people just getting into drumming, you know, maybe they don't realize that you can actually still get a new drum set in these sizes. You don't have to be a tier one level artist or in a band or, you know, for any particular drum company to get those sizes. You can, like me, I'm just a nobody, you know, you can still get those sizes. They're still available.
Yeah. You can get anything you want. I mean, they'll, if you pay for it, someone will make it.
This is true.
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So that answers on the outline here. You have questions of, does anyone still play them and do any manufacturers still produce them? Which you just answered, which yes. I mean, of course you sure. can get them, but anyone still playing them, are there any artists that you really like now that are like really, you know, being a good ambassador to the power tom movement?
I think so. So there's still a couple like, John Larson from Volbeat. He's still playing power toms. He's using the four big toms, 10, 12, 13, 14. And then, of course, in my opinion, the grand ambassador for all power tom players, power tom strong since like 1983, is the great Nico McBrain from Iron Maiden. Yes. He has not deviated from his setup at all since back in the day. So he carries the flag for all his power tom players, I think.
I mean, really, though, that's like, as you said, tier one drummer. Probably one of the biggest drummers in the world, obviously. But like, sure. You know, having a tech to set everything up, because if you go gigging, it's not, I mean, even the stage size, obviously they're playing arenas with Iron Maiden, but like,
sure.
You can't really, I think every drummer in their life has shown up to some sort of a gig with a ridiculous size drum set, and the sound guy is just like rolling his eyes, and you've taken up 80% of the stage,
and you're like, what's the problem with that?
Yeah, what's the problem? Yeah, exactly. Like your crazy 80s cymbal stand is like poking your guitarist in the back. But yeah, he's a great ambassador though, and you need that. The children need to see it's representation, you know. Sure. Like, and you need to see that, oh, I could do that. Which I mentioned this to you before, but like, I've played a four piece kit for a long time, and it's great, but I honestly think I am like sick of it, and I want more toms. Not even to say that I want specifically power tom sizes. I think it'd be cool, because you could technically kind of have like a hybrid of like a couple normal traditional size toms, and then get into power tom sizes as you get further down.
Sure.
But man, I think I played a gig where I filled in for someone a year or two ago, and he had a Pacific kit that was like it was probably like eight and a 10 over by themselves, and then 12, probably 14, and then a 16 floor. And it was awesome just to have those little toms just to go around. It's like, it's a lot of freedom, you know. Sometimes it's like, I don't know. I like the four piece. Four piece is great, but sure, it is more fun, in my opinion, to have more toms to play around on.
If some is good, more is better. Now, if you're in a band, if you're a drummer in a band, then obviously you should play for the song, not for yourself. Yes. Always serve the song first, and don't get too self-indulgent. But if that works for the music, you know, if you're like Mike Portnoy or Mike Mangini, then you can go nuts, because that music allows you to have that kind of musical freedom to kind of dance around the kit a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. So, yeah. Mike Portnoy is a great representative of just big drum sets in general, because everyone watched those videos of his as a kid, and like anyone, but that one sticks out to me as like, you know, oh my God, that's so, and then there's like an auxiliary hi-hat over here, which raises the question of the watch outs, I think, with these big, huge, giant drum sets of these super deep toms. I mean, you got to raise things up a little bit higher because your bass drum, and there's more finesse of like the ergonomics of doing this right. I mean, what's your experience with getting set up right, and you know, your hi-hat and your legs are super spread apart?
For me personally, I've had a double bass kit ever since my export, you know, back in the day, and I find it pretty easy. On this one, I only have a two-legged hi-hat stand, and so I've been doing this my whole life. So I have my heel on my hi-hat stand and my front part of my foot on the bass drum pedal, and I find it very easy to kind of go back and forth. Sure. But I've been doing it forever. But for some people, that might not work for them. They need to have them like right up next to each other. But I don't find that a problem. And then a lot of times, like if I'm playing the ride, a lot of times it is in the chorus section, so I can kind of twist to my right just a hair, because my right cymbal is a bit extended out over my 18-inch floor tom. I don't have a problem with it, but I'm used to playing it. But I think if someone else came on my kit, they might be like, might feel this a little more of a reach, if you will.
Yeah, you got to get used to it. I had that on my rocker kit. I had that kind of contraption, I'll call it, where it was the clamp on the hi-hat, three-leg hi-hat stand, which a two-leg hi-hat stand, you turn it, you kind of get sort of, you can kind of get it up in that little corner area closer to it. But like you said, but it was the thing that had the, you know, whatever, clamp on the hi-hat, the little arm on the bass drum where you could close the legs and attach the hi-hat to the bass drum.
Yeah.
Which was obviously to solve that problem that you're talking about of having, because if you have to have your hi-hat pedal an extra foot over because the legs are set up in a certain way, that can get uncomfortable. Then you're walking like you've been riding a horse for a long time.
For sure.
And it's not kind of fun. After a while, you're like hip bones are just kind of like, so you got to take care of yourself and
for sure.
Listen to your body.
And it might not even be in that. And also might be, you might not be serving the music. It might take too long to get your foot from one place to the other or back and forth. And so you might miss that note or that quick little flourish that you're trying to get done. So I think it all it goes about how do you set it up? Is it comfortable for you? Doesn't matter if it's comfortable for someone else. It's got to be comfortable for you.
Yeah, exactly. And mess with it and tweak it. And because it's, I feel like part of the fun of having such a giant drum set is like experimenting and setting things up differently, which on that note, let's hear about your really cool story about getting your dream drum set.
Sure.
And again, for people kind of listening, describe it, you know, if you're watching, you can see it obviously behind Kyle this entire time, but just tell us all about your, you know, acquiring this awesome drum set.
Sure. So for me, this is a lifetime of, you know, wanting a massive kit. You know, I grew up, like I said, in the 80s when this all power toms and big kits were totally in vogue. And I can remember, so I was in the military, and back in 2010, I was in Hawaii, and my parents are still in Connecticut. And I remember I talked to my dad on the phone. I was like, you know, I really miss playing the drums. I hadn't played in a couple of years. And I'm like, I really want to buy a nice top of the line kit. You know, I can afford something a little nicer now. I'm a little older, and but they're so expensive. And he's like, you know, just start saving $5 here and there. And he said, eventually you'll have enough if you just save. And easier said than done, right? You're like, oh my God, like, do you know how much these things are? And so
It's like $5 is a drop in the bucket on a, I don't know how much yours was, but I mean, these things can be $5,000-$7,000 easily plus. I mean,
oh sure. So it's funny. My dad wasn't a big music person, so that was, I don't get all down, but that was the last, he passed away unexpectedly just a couple days later after that conversation.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you. But it was a great conversation because we talked about drums and music. So for me, that was like, what an awesome, you know, conversation to have with him.
Yeah.
But his words carried with me, you know, save, 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 be diligent. So it took me 10 years to save. I saved for 10 years. And then, and I did that on purpose because I wanted to buy my kit all at once. I didn't want to like piece it together a couple years later, buy something and then something. I wanted it produced all at the same time for like a quality and consistency. And so what I have here is it's a Pearl reference behind me, not the reference Pure, but a reference because they're the thicker shells, a little heavier, a little more sturdy. And it took 10 years to save, and then it took 1 year and 2 months for Pearl to produce it and send it to me.
Wow.
So it took a really long time, but, you know, global pandemic delays, you know, because of the all that stuff. So totally understand it just happens that way. But this was like a lifetime for me of saving and just, you know, getting what I really wanted. So I'm just going to hand it over so people can see a little bit more of my little kit there.
Your little kit there.
Yeah.
Well, run through again, kind of, I mean, so what's the finish?
So it's, they call it Scarlet Sparkle Burst. So it's, cool. Gets a little darker as it goes outwards. It's in power tom sizes, basically. So I have 8 rack toms. So like, kind of like the Genesis kit, this has a 6x8, an 8x8, a 10x10, a 12x10, 13x11, 14x12, I almost forgot, a 15x13, and then the last big one over there, and that's a 16x14-inch mounted tom-tom, and then I have the standard 2 floors, 16x16 and 18x16, and then I took a chance. I originally was going to do like 22x20-inch bass drums, something a little longer, but I thought about it for a while, and I was like, you know, I really want a 24-inch bass drum, something a little bigger, more volume, and so that was twofold. The real reason is for the sound, because it's pretty thunderous sound, in my opinion, a 24-inch bass drum. And then also, they're 2 inches taller. So for me, it helped with the smaller rack toms. Like, I have 6, 8, 10, 12. And so it helps with the hi-hat stand. So having the taller bass drum, the drums are just a little higher, and it's just easier to go down the toms. So that was just kind of an accidental benefit of that.
Totally.
But I really love the 24-inch bass drums. If you haven't played a 24-inch kick drum, man, they're just fun. Super thunderous, beefy, loud. So, and this is, you know, pending a lottery win, you know, I'm not buying another kit. This is it.
After 10 years, it's so cool. I mean, there's nothing wrong with buying a piece here. I've done that where you buy a piece here. Like, I like cheapo bought a DW set where I bought like a tom on eBay. And sure. I bought a floor tom at like Columbus Pro Percussion, and I used a Ludwig bass drum, which I think I got rewrapped, which so was cheating, but I was like 13 or 14 years old, but
yeah.
It wasn't the same. It wasn't ordering your beautiful drum set and opening the box and it's all together. I mean, congratulations. That is so cool. You 10 Thanks. Years of work, and it's just unbelievable.
It's a lot of fun. You know, if you're ever in the area, you're always welcome to come over and play.
I'd love that.
Yeah, a lot of variety, a lot of fun. You know, you can do a million different things with it. So lots of good music. And just because you have, like in my case, I have a big hit, doesn't mean you actually have to play everything all at once in every song. You know, so you guys got to be able to keep the pocket, keep the groove, you know, serve the song. But if you're just playing for fun, then go nuts.
Do you ever split it up and just have you like gigged out with this kit, or I mean, it's been the pandemic for a long time, so things have changed, but do you ever just like, I'm going to use kick, snare, five piece kit or something to kind of split it up?
I haven't split it up yet. I actually don't get to play as often as I want. I travel a lot for work. And so setting it up in its entirety is kind of like, has been my goal, you know,
to get the kit.
But I think eventually, you know, fooling around with it here and there, like you said, Bart, would pretty cool. Cause I think at the end of the day, if you have a 5-piece or 15-piece, you got to switch it up a little bit to kind of stir creativity and, you know, come up with some different things. So I think eventually, you know, maybe I'll do a 6-8 mounted tom with, you know, a bass and a snare, you know, something like that, or go super deep.
Yeah.
But just some, you know, change it up, just do something
it's
different.
Just fun. Yeah. Man. Cool. So you already said that you got some help from Remo and Tama, which are really cool of those companies to do that and to help out. Anything you want to like shout out here at the end or anything like that?
I do want to thank, I also talked with Yamaha. I talked to them about their Rock Tour Custom, which I forgot to talk about earlier. And they just came out and said, you know, that was a natural extension of their Tour Custom kits and their Turbo, their Rock Turbo Tour Custom as a mouthful.
Tongue twister.
Yeah. Essentially, that was a limited series that came out in the late 80s. Also, the difference is they were in power tom sizes, and then they didn't do the long lug. They did the single the non-connecting lug, kind of like on the reference kit, to cut down on some of the hardware weight because those shells were so thick. So I want to thank them again because all the drum companies and manufacturers I reached out to, they all were super kind enough to, you know, get back to me and answer my questions. So I'd just like thank all them because they didn't have to do that. So I appreciate all their time that they took as well. And then I guess the last thing I'd add is, you know, my inspiration as a drummer is Eric Carr. And though he played Ludwigs, you know, I have a Pearl kit, and I'm just, you know, I find that, you know, as a drummer, whatever works for me product wise is what I'm going to stick with. But you know, Eric played Ludwigs his whole career, but I still got my kind of kit in a Pearl.
Totally.
And this is actually, it's funny, we're doing it this week. This is the anniversary of his passing. So if you're a new drummer or new to drumming, I encourage everyone to kind of Google Eric Carr, look at some of his videos on his anniversary. I think, he's pretty inspiring as a drummer, I find. And he's got some great chops. And I think you'll like his solo and all his stuff he does on the drums.
Cool. That is awesome. That is a first where someone has said, you know, at the end, kind of like, what do you want to shout out? A recommendation of a drummer for people to check out. And I think that's super cool. And a great, I mean, Eric Carr is awesome. Sad that he passed away, obviously, but that's just life. And he's obviously inspired you and a whole bunch of other drummers. So Kyle, yeah, man, this has been awesome. I just appreciate so much that you did the work, and you were pretty fast about putting this together. And obviously it's something you're passionate about. And it probably learning more and doing research about these drum sets probably increased your love of power tom drum sets, because now you know more about them, you know, and the different brands.
Absolutely. I hope everyone kind of embraces them just a little bit more. I know they're not for everybody. Totally get it. You know, they're a lot of fun to play, whether you have a 4-piece or a 12-piece. You know, power toms are just kind of a fun drum to kind of play.
Yeah, totally. On that note, Kyle, thank you for being here, my friend, and thank you for listening to the show, and now you're on the show. It's just super cool, so I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Bart. And I just want to say again, I think it's a wonderful thing you've done for the drumming community. I have learned so much in the last year since I found your podcast and started listening to it, you know, the history of drumming. I think you've provided a great basket of knowledge for every drummer to dig in, and everyone can take something different out of it. And now it's here on the record for, you know, forever. So I think you've done a wonderful job. So thanks so much for everything you've done.
Thank you. Thanks, man. That means a lot to hear that from someone who's listened to it and appreciated it and relatively new to the show from listening for the past year. So that's awesome, man. I appreciate it, Kyle.
Thanks, Bart. Appreciate it.
If you like this podcast, find me on social media at Drum History and please share, rate, and leave a review. And let me know topics that you would like to learn about in the future. Until next time, keep on learning.